tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Lori London reporting. U.S. President Donald Trump has announced that a summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un will take place in Singapore on June 12th. During an event at Joint Base Andrews, the president, accompanied by First Lady Melania Trump, boarded a U.S. Air Force jet to briefly speak with the three men who had been released from a prison in North Korea.
These are great people. They've been through a lot, but it's a great honor. But the true honor is going to be if we have a victory in getting rid of nuclear weapons.
The president said the goal for his upcoming talks with Kim is for North Korea to agree to denuclearize. The U.S. says it's looking for allied support to force Iran into new negotiations over its nuclear weapons development in the aftermath of President Trump's withdrawal from the international agreement. Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff is among those critical of that decision.
The president broke America's word when we entered into this agreement. Now, it's one thing for the president to break his own word. He does that seemingly all the time. But it's another when the president breaks the word of the United States of America.
Trump has vowed to soon reimpose economic sanctions against Iran that were ended in 2015 when Iran agreed to curb its nuclear program. A dam in the Kenya's Rift Valley burst late Wednesday, killing at least 27 people. Water swept away numerous homes and businesses after breaking through the Patel Dam in Solai, about 150 kilometers northwest of Nairobi. Officials say about 40 people have been rescued and taken to hospitals, and rescue crews continue searching for more people who could be trapped. The Kenyan government said Wednesday the rains had displaced 220,000 people. This is VOA. The United States is imposing travel restrictions on Pakistani diplomats starting Friday. Ambassador Aizaz Chowdhury tells VOA both countries have to come close to each other, and measures like these don't help. Last month, Pakistani media reported the diplomats will be restricted from traveling more than 40 kilometers from the embassy in Washington or consulates in other cities without permission. The Pentagon says multiple failures are to blame for the Niger ambush that killed four U.S. service members last October, including insufficient training and preparation, as well as lack of proper command approval for the mission. At a news conference Thursday, Major General Roger Cloutier, U.S. Africa Command Chief of Staff, said there were repeated acts of bravery as the soldiers risked their lives to rescue each other during the hour-long assault.
Sergeant LaDavid Johnson, first of all, died actively engaging the enemy. He was never captured alive. His hands were never bound. His body was treated like all the other remains, both U.S. and Niger, and his serviceable equipment was stripped and taken from him. But he was never in enemy hands alive. They did have access to his remains and took his equipment.
A report summary released Thursday includes recommendations to improve mission planning and approval procedures. In an interview with journalist Andrea Mitchell on NBC's Today Show, Vice President Mike Pence was asked if he believed Special Counsel Robert Mueller's probe of Russian interference into the 2016 election was a hoax.
It's been about a year since this investigation began. Our administration has provided over 1 million documents. We fully cooperated in it. And in the interest of the country, I think it's time to wrap it up. And I would very respectfully encourage the special counsel and his team to bring their work to completion.
There's no indication that Mueller is close to ending his year-long probe. His legal team has been negotiating with Trump's lawyers over whether the president will sit for an interview and under what terms. If no agreement is reached, Mueller has suggested that he could subpoena Trump to testify under oath before a grand jury. And 2 weeks of climate talks organized by the United Nations came to a close Thursday as countries failed to resolve differences about implementing the Paris Climate Accord. The negotiations will resume in Bangkok, Thailand in September, where an extra week's meeting has now been scheduled. The pact signatories have set a December deadline to agree on the precise rules countries have to stick to under the agreement. I'm Lori London in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, May 11th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. At least 44 people have died after a dam burst in northern Kenya following weeks of heavy rainfall.
We are dealing with a tragic situation right now. Let us focus on addressing the affected families, solving the problem in Solai, while at the same time we look at, you know, drawing lessons from this and looking at what else that we can do.
Fred Matiang'i is Kenya's Interior Cabinet Secretary. The Kenyan Human Rights Commission wants to know by today why the Kenyan immigration has still not issued Miguna Miguna his passport. Uganda lawmakers oppose withdrawal of a UN base from Entebbe. And Sierra Leone's president announces free primary and secondary education effective September this year.
What that means is that no people who go to both primary and secondary school will pay tuition fees. The free education will also cover core textbooks, exercise books, and uniforms.
Mohamed Rahman Suare is Sierra Leone's information minister. And refugee evacuations from Libya to Niger resumed yesterday, Thursday. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. More than 40 people have died and thousands more displaced after a dam in Kenya's Solai Nakuru County broke its banks following weeks of heavy rainfalls. Officials say the number of fatalities is likely to rise. There has also been massive destruction of property. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
That has been the mood since Wednesday night at Solai in Nakuru County after the Patel Dam that has been declared illegal by officials of the Kenya Water Resource Management Authority broke its dikes and flooded homes in the area, killing more than 44 people. According to the Rift Valley Regional Commander Mwongo Chimwanga, the number is likely to increase after the rescue mission was called off on Thursday evening due to heavy downpour in the area.
We have, as a multi-agency, started the command center. We assign teams to move down to do search and rescue. We have also established a camp for the affected families. Though this evening, again, we have, because of reasons and the nature of the weather, we have again been compelled to relocate it to Solai Secondary School.
Interior Cabinet Secretary Fred Matiang'i, who visited the area, says the tragedy is a blow to the nation and that the government is prepared to provide for displaced families in the area.
We are dealing with a tragic situation right now. Let us focus on addressing the affected families, solving the problem in Solai, while at the same time we look at, you know, drawing lessons from this and looking at what else that we can do. All the multi-agency teams that are required to be there in place, the KDF is there, Kenya Police is there, the National Youth Service is there, the teams from the National Disaster Response is available, Red Cross has joined the team.
However, Nakuru County Governor Lee Kinyanjui says there was a hindrance to rescue the residents after electricity poles were washed away, leaving the whole county in darkness.
But because it was night, we were not able to do proper rescue because when this tragedy occurred, the lights went off, the poles were washed away, and the whole town was rendered dark. And then it was also not very possible for vehicles to go up to that place because of the water.
We did send a technical team to go and evaluate the other two remaining dams. And it is worth noting that one of the dams will have to be emptied. And we are working around the clock to ensure that that is done in a manner that does not endanger anybody.
Residents say since last week, the area has been flooding and that the agony surrounding them was unexpected.
The private dam lacks an outlet for overflow. For I can recall, I've severally witnessed the owner failing to create an outlet whenever the dam hits its capacity level. Around this place, there is another dam showing the same signs, and nothing is being done. We feel our lives are in danger if government fails to do anything to curb the situation.
We were preparing our supper when we heard a loud bang. Then my daughter rushed out to check what was happening. Then she quick rushed back and told me, "Mom, let's take off. The dam has broken its banks."
Thousands of Kenyans have been rendered homeless and thousands of dollars in property damage since March this year when heavy rain started pouring in the country. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
The Kenyan National Human Rights Commission says it will ask the country's immigration services today, Friday, to explain why the service has failed to fulfill an ultimatum to issue lawyer Miguna Miguna his passport and an air ticket to return to Kenya from Canada by next week. Miguna, who has a dual Canadian and Kenyan citizenship, was deported from Kenya in March. Kenyan authorities had accused him of treason for attending a mock swearing-in ceremony for defeated presidential candidate Raila Odinga. Opposition and civil rights groups say Miguna's deportation was illegal. George Morara, vice chairman for the Kenyan National Human Rights Commission, tells VOA's Peter Clotty that Kenyan immigration services must obey court orders.
The deadline we gave to immigration on Thursday, and therefore today, because we haven't seen any communication from immigration, we are going to take the further steps to call the director of immigration, that is Mr. Mnyoki, and also call the permanent secretary for immigration, Dr. Kihalangwa, to really find out what the status is. So I want to know if they're really going to adhere to the court orders. They want the Kenyan government to bring Miguna back so that he actually has his day in court in line with our constitution, Article 49 on fair administrative action. Therefore, we will be letting the Kenyan public know the response we get from the permanent secretary for immigration as well as the director for immigration.
So what makes you think your group would be able to change anything so far that the Immigration Service has refused to do in terms of carrying out a court order specifically to ensure the return of Miguna Miguna?
Well, I think what gives us the impetus to do what we are doing is actually anchored in our constitution, Article 59 of our constitution, which clearly spells out the mandate of the Kenya National Commission on Human Rights. And one of those mandates is really to ensure the observance of human rights in all parts of this republic. We have been very clear in following up on this Miguna matter that his rights were violated. We have actually told the government as much that they violated Miguna's rights, because our interest in the matter is really from a human rights perspective. And I want to believe that as a country, we are still governed by the rule of law, and that is the basis of the demand that we are making, that we are a country is governed by the rule of law, and we want to really put that to test by reaching out to the relevant state actors to ensure that their actions are governed in line with the constitution of this country and also in line with the requirements of the law. Court orders must be obeyed. Therefore, that's really the basis of what we're doing as a commission.
Do you think you have any leverage to put pressure on the government to abide by the court order? Because some Kenyans are saying that it appears that the Kenyan Human Rights Commission does not have the necessary power to pressure the government to obey the court orders.
Well, I think it's what we call the principle of the separation of powers. Really, for me, when Kenyans gave themselves a new constitution in 2010, there is a reason why they thought there is value in having a national human rights commission. And in that spirit of the separation of powers, we expect that Parliament will actually make laws, the executive will implement those laws, and that the judiciary will interpret those laws. And in the Miguna matter, the judiciary has been very clear in interpreting that law.
George Morara is the vice chair for the Kenya National Human Rights Commission. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Nairobi. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Friday, May 11th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. Ugandan lawmakers voted this week to oppose a recommendation from United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres that the UN move a major logistics base from Uganda to Kenya. The lawmakers say the move would be an injustice given the sacrifice that Ugandan troops have made in Somalia over the years. Halima Athumani reports from Kampala.
A letter this month from UN Chief Antonio Guterres to the UN Advisory Committee recommended the logistics base be moved from the Ugandan city of Entebbe to Nairobi in Kenya. The move would be part of an effort by the UN to reduce its 45 regional centers around the world to 4. The BES currently supports 11 UN missions in Africa, including missions in Mali, South Sudan, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Sudan's Darfur region. Hundreds of Ugandans are employed at the BES. Legislators argue that Uganda is being cast aside despite its location in the heart of a region plagued by immense conflict. The motion before Parliament was introduced by Theodore Sechikubo, who noted that Uganda was the first country to send peacekeeping troops to Somalia in 2007.
We lost 4 choppers. We have lost an untold number of lives. We have paid the ultimate price. And therefore, it is so undiplomatic. It is so discomforting that this reciprocity is being paid in the negatives.
Ugandan soldiers make up the largest contingent in AMISOM, the African Union mission in Somalia, which has been protecting the Somali federal government and fighting militant group Al-Shabaab for more than a decade. Legislator Semuju Nganda says if the UN can't appreciate such sacrifices, it can leave.
The Auditor General in various reports has been complaining that the UN doesn't want to pay at Entebbe. In fact, we should be celebrating that they are leaving, because they occupy our whole facility, the old Entebbe airport, for free. The money that you want to get as a result of employing 1,500 Ugandans is money that you can get when you develop the old airport and begin serving the regional market.
Uganda's Prime Minister, Rakana Rugunda, says the government is engaging with the UN Secretary General so that an amicable settlement can be reached.
It was convenient, it was cost-effective, it was in the long run cheaper for the UN to run its services using Entebbe, and in our view, that center should remain.
UN committees are expected to discuss the proposed relocation of the BES and make a final decision in July. Halima Athmani, for VOA News, Kampala.
Sierra Leone President Julius Maada Bio has announced that his government will offer free primary and secondary education effective September this year. Addressing the opening of Parliament yesterday, Thursday, President Bio also said he will give free university education to 3 children of every school teacher with 10 years of experience. He also promised to raise the education sector budget from 11 to 20%. Information Minister Mohamed Rahman Sware says President Bio is making good on his campaign promise of free education. He says the government will pay for the free education program by cutting government expenditure.
During the presidential campaign, we made a manifest commitment that we would deliver free education for Sierra Leonean children from primary school right up to the completion of senior secondary school, which we will terminate at SS3. So what that means is that no people who go to both primary and secondary school will pay tuition fees. The free education will also cover core textbooks, exercise books, and uniforms.
So tell me, when would this become effective? What school year are you talking about?
His Excellency was very clear and categorical about that today. He said the free education will be rolled out in September this year at the start of the school year, because we are quite mindful of the fact that we have serious issues with school dropout rates. Many parents cannot afford to pay for their kids, so as a result, they drop out of school. We believe any government work household will not sit by and allow kids to drop out of school, particularly as we see education as a liberating and empowering force.
So the president said that he has also announced free university education for 3 children of every school teacher who has had 10 years of experience. The key question I think many Sierra Leoneans will want to know is, how is the government going to pay for that?
So start with, we inherited the worst economy since independence. But having said that, during the campaign, we promised to run the country economy, manage it efficiently, prudently, and responsibly. So yes, we are going to increase domestic revenue mobilization. We have also enacted the Treasury single account, which now means that all government revenues for ministries, departments, and agencies are centralized in one account at the central bank. So we are quite confident we'll be able to raise much needed domestic revenue to fund our various free education concepts and other flagship programs. At the same time, at a recent meeting with the World Bank and IMF, commitments have been made to support the program.
Mr. Sware, I've been to Freetown, but really, really haven't gone there to stay longer. But a friend of mine who just came back from there last year was telling me he went to this famous Fura Bay College or university. The condition of the college was so bad that he could not even take a picture. I mean, when we say perhaps the president should have begun first to do those things, take care of the infrastructure before announcing free education.
No. They are not mutually exclusive. The president is very depressed by the current situation, the decay and dilapidation at Robert College. During the campaign run, he went there and he spoke to that issue. There is currently an ongoing rehabilitation program on campus. It's going at a very snail pace. He has promised to ensure that the project is re-energized, it's rekindled, so that students can return to campus and they will have an enabling teaching and learning environment. The same kind of environment in which he also studied at Bradford and where other students study across the world. In his address to the nation today, he particularly mentioned that at the time in history, Probe College was referred to as Athens of West Africa. Today, it is a mere shadow of itself. He is committed to rekindling that image and he wants in the new direction.
Mr. Suarez, thank you very much. So nice to talk with you and good luck with this experiment on free education.
Thank you very much, James.
Mohamed Rahman Suare is the Sierra Leone's Information Minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Refugee evacuations from Libya to Niger resumed on Thursday as 132 people were flown out of Tripoli. The flights to Niger stopped in March after the Niger government voiced concerns that refugees were not being resettled into other countries quickly enough. The United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, helps coordinate the program, which transfers refugees in detention in Libya to Niger to then be relocated to other countries. UNHCR spokesperson Romain Desclos tells Ricky Stryer that this first flight is one that is hopefully many needed flights that will find resettlement solutions for refugees and asylum seekers currently in Libya.
Indeed, I mean, there has been evacuation stops at the request of the Nigerian authorities because they didn't see much movement from the ones who had been previously evacuated from Libya into Niger, and then seeing them being resettled in the country that I've offered a resettlement place. However, I mean, together with the Nigerian Authority, we have worked closely with the resettlement countries to illustrate them to operationalize those pledges to make sure that indeed refugees who have been evacuated to Niger don't spend too much time and can start moving on to resettlement countries as soon as possible.
The government of Niger, with financing from the EU, has offered space for up to 1,500 refugees in this program. Does this 1,500 quota meet the needs, or are there more needs, and how will you guys address that?
Indeed, I mean, the Nigerian authorities have expanded the space for evacuees from Libya to Niger to up to 1,500, and that's an enormous joy or breath of fresh air for those, because that gives us the ability to evacuate refugees and asylum seekers who need international protection from Libyan detention centers. Now, what we have at the moment is we have over 50,000 people, refugees and asylum seekers, who are registered with UNHCR in Libya. So the resettlement pledges that we have received are only a portion. And that's why, I mean, this mechanism is an emergency life-saving mechanism that enables us to evacuate the most vulnerable refugees and asylum seekers who are currently in detention centers in Libya, evacuate them to Niger, where we can have the time to register them, to help them get prepared for interviews and missions where you would have resettlement countries who can meet with them and plan ahead where they can be resettled later on.
Are the arrival numbers into Libya dropping compared to years past? And if so, why do you think that is?
That I do not have that information on the numbers of arrival in Libya. Having said that, what we work here is the emergency evacuation, people who have been identified in Libya, either as refugees or asylum seekers. And they are in detention centers where we know the conditions are terrible, horrendous, and has been documented quite throughout. I mean, what is important to know is that this is a new, this flight, the flight that left this morning, Tripoli, and arrived in Niger, is one of several. We've reached a number of over 1,400 refugees and asylum seekers evacuated from Libya to Niger and to other relocations. This is only a portion, and this is enormous efforts being put in place to provide them with not only psychosocial help when they arrive in Niger, but also help them being prepared for resettlement interviews. And we really appreciate the Nigerian Agency of Niger, as well as the state that has pledged resettlement places for those refugees and asylum seekers.
That was UNHCR spokesperson Romain Desclos speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin with the reigning CAF African Footballer of the Year, Egyptian Mohamed Salah. His phenomenal season got further recognition during a busy Thursday evening as he collected three end-of-season awards. The 43-goal forward was presented with the Footballer of the Year award at the Football Writers Association Awards in London, having already won two prestigious awards at his club's event. A private jet facilitated Egyptian appearing in person at both events, where he spoke openly about being written off after a disappointing first spell in the Premier League with Chelsea. And champions Barcelona have confirmed that the La Liga champions will play a friendly match against South African champions Mamelodi Sundowns in Johannesburg on May 16th as part of celebrations to mark 100 years since the birth of Nelson Mandela. The game is being played at the FNB Stadium, popularly known as the Soccer City Stadium. Meanwhile, Spanish top-flight La Liga outfit Atletico Madrid will play a friendly match against the Super Eagles of Nigeria on May 22nd. The match will take place at the Gusau Akpabio International Stadium and will allow Nigerian fans to watch Diego Simeone's side, who have been one of the best performing teams this season and sit in second place in the Spanish La Liga. Staying with the end-of-season games, Nigerian international Ola Aina has asked to be left out of Hull City's squad for their trip to Kenya later today, where they will take on Kenyan league champions Gor Mahia on Sunday. Dylan Kerr is Gor Mahia's head coach.
We never give up, and that's what I like about this team and like about these players. We never got an attitude where we give up. We don't feel sorry for ourselves.
And to all the sports news, South Africa's cabinet has expressed concerns over the development regarding the new regulations of the International Association of Athletics Federations. Last month, the global athletics governing body announced new rules where female athletes, including South African athletic star Caster Semenya, will have to reduce and then maintain their testosterone levels to no greater than 5 nanomoles per liter by November 1st, 2018, if they want to compete in events ranging from 400 meters to a mile. Communications Minister Namuvula Mukunyane on Thursday presented a briefing on Wednesday's cabinet meeting to the media.
Cabinet calls upon South Africans to support all athletes that may be affected by these regulations, both here at home and in the rest of the world. We want to assume that these regulations have got nothing to do with the capability of Caster Semenya.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend, and we look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Sierra Leone President Julius Maada Bio has announced that his government will offer free primary and secondary education effective September this year. And that's it for this Friday, May 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Dave Magnus, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good weekend.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, as Burundi prepares for a May 17th referendum to extend President Pierre Nkurunziza's time in office, it battles allegations of harassment committed against perceived opponents of the referendum. Critical times in Burundi, on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.